and welcome to another episode of Terra Nullius Cyprus. I'm Costa Constanti. Thank you to the CVAR Severities Foundation for supporting us and to Island Talks for hosting our podcast. Today, I have in the studio my latest guest, Irodos Miltiadous. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Costa, for having me.
I've been wanting to have you on the program for a little while because you dabble in an industry that I'm not familiar with entirely, the sports world. You're a sportscaster, correct?
Yeah.
And a sports journalist.
That's correct, yes.
Tell me the difference between the two.
So, sports journalism is my profession. We cover sports. For the fans, we are the voice of sports, which is the biggest industry in the world. We like saying that sports is the most important secondary thing in the world, behind health, obviously, and family.
Which is kind of important.
It's the most important, obviously, and of course. But sports is the pastime for millions and millions and millions of fans around the planet. And we, as sports journalists, we're the voice of sports. So sports journalism is the broad aspect of the profession. A sportscaster is the person who specifically covers sporting events at the stadium for television or radio.
So the sportscaster is the guy that we hear, like with if we're watching the horses running down the field, they're the ones going... First of all, how do you... I mean, you must be like reading the Greek news when you... commentating on football, for example, when they're passing the ball. Like, you have so many players on the field in soccer, for example, in football. Like, they've all got their numbers and they've all got their names and they've all got different, like, languages, especially if it's an international. How on earth do you do that without getting tongue-tied?
Well, first of all, I like your mention on horses because I come from Agios Dimedios, which is where the racetrack is. So I grew up next to the racetrack.
Horse capital of Cyprus.
The horse capital, the betting capital of Cyprus. We can speak about betting too, which is a big part of sports in a little bit. I mean, it's the same question about the doctor. How does he know which procedure to do or or a lawyer, which law to use for his arguments? It's part of our job. We have to know who's on the pitch, who's playing. I do basketball mostly and Olympic sports for CYBC or CEDA Vision. That's sort of my main television that I cover. And when I do basketball, I know the teams. I could recognize the players, especially when the season goes on and I'm more familiar with the teams. I don't have to study that much because I already know the teams. But you also have to be prepared. You have to have your notes, info on each player, on what the team's playing, on stats and everything. And it's a matter of, you know, let's say experience. By doing it for years, you get better, just like any other profession.
You would obviously need to, sometimes you will need to do your research before going into the match to commentate on it or whatever, because you would have new players, you would have substitutes. And you yourself, I think you play basketball, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, I still play amateurly basketball, at least I try. I'm 40 now, so I'm a little bit younger than LeBron James, who just had a triple-double.
All right.
That's having double points, double rebounds, double assists. He's 41 and still going strong in the NBA.
So 41 must be geriatric in NBA,
It's actually, they actually starting to make, not make fun. The fact that he's 41 and competing at that level is incredible. So, you know, people my age, our ages, we're not supposed to be doing sports. To be honest, the reason I'm a sports journalist is because I'm not that... talented in sports. Most sports journalists are athletes who could not become athletes, so they had to do something else. Of course, we do have the former athletes who retire and then go on to become usually sportscasters.
Well, you'd have to be not only passionate about sports to be a sports journalist or sportscaster, you'd need to be quite witty, to be honest with you, because there's so many moving parts, so many statistics to deal with, and everything is happening fast and now. And in this modern world, like, I mean, if we cast our minds back to the 80s, where often we were listening to sports on the radio. So, you know, you were our voice and you were our eyes on the field and relaying it to us in sound. Today, you're also on the TV. You've got all the data on the screen. You've got all these replays. You've got all this technology. You've got AI coming in now, which is, would you say it's something that's going to help you guys or it's going to be something that challenges you?
Well, who knows what's going to happen with it? Will AI make humanity better or will it become our downfall and destruction like the Terminator movies? Really, nobody knows. It's a big discussion, actually, in my profession, AI. Obviously, AI is helpful if you could use it, but our main concern, because as president of the Sports Writers Association of Cyprus, we're not a union. We don't deal with union issues, but we do try to support our members. And the loss of jobs because of media owners using AI to cover for journalists is a real concern.
All right.
So these are topics that we're actually discussing both in local and international level.
Okay,
currently.
Wow.
But it's a huge topic, and I honestly don't have a clear answer. I think most people don't know where this thing is going.
I think with most industries, that's the case. Yeah. I mean, like, I guess we're at the stage now where we're trying to encourage each other to use it in a way that's going to be beneficial to us. But listen, let me jump back to, you mentioned Olympics before. Now, have you been to an Olympic Games in person?
Yeah, I've been to two.
Which ones?
We were discussing the Olympics before we started the podcast. We were discussing about Australia 2032. Rio 2016 and Tokyo 2020.
So Brazil,
which
and
were
Japan.
In 2021 because they were postponed for a year.
Yes, we all remember the 2020 Japanese, the Tokyo Olympics that were postponed by a year, and then they were held without audiences, correct?
Yeah.
Apart from sportscasters and sports journalists.
It was an incredible experience because, you know, now it's been since the pandemic 6 years. Sometimes we forget how things were back then.
Yeah.
We try to block it from memories. I remember the first day of the Olympic Games, we went to the opening ceremony, was empty, the stadium, which was crazy by itself.
Yeah.
Day one of the games, we went to watch gymnastics. We had a Cypriot athlete competing, and the stadium was empty, just a few accredited media, some team supports. I was sitting on the opposite stands because I went to see my athlete competing on the other, one of the opposite side of the field of play, and it was me, a journalist from CYBC, nobody else.
Wow.
On the stand during the Olympic Games.
That must
crazy
have been surreal.
It was surreal.
Especially when the Olympics themselves are all about, you know, what was birthed in the ancient Greek games, this whole thing about ceasefire and peace and cooperation between cultures and communities. So, I mean, first of all, you would see the players. Obviously, the sports people were there. And the whole point is for them to be able to cooperate and play with each other and interact. But not having an audience, you would have lost that international interaction, which is the Olympic values. Now, we all know that sports is multifaceted. It's meant to be about, you know, the activity, the competition, the betting, but it's also about building peace, building awareness of each other, cooperation through friendly competition. Do you see sports as an agent for peace and growth and cooperation?
Yeah.
Do you see any negativity in that? Or?
Look, sports is, we actually dabbled a little bit this before and before we started. Sports is probably the biggest industry, or if not the biggest, one of the biggest industries in the world. Only for Cyprus, for an example, sports generates around 60 million euros only for sports tourism.
Wow.
Which is a huge amount
what
for our country.
What is sports tourism exactly for Cyprus?
Yeah, good question. Sports tourism is the visiting of our country and using our facilities and hotels and everything by people who come here to compete either professionally in sports or even amateurly. For example, we may have teams coming from colder countries to train during the wintertime. We may have semi-professional or amateur cyclists coming to enjoy the trails of Cyprus or have hiking. Even people that come for hiking or open water swimming in Cyprus or even skiing on Drodos, which is a small part, but we even have that in our country. So we have sports tourism bring people, thousands of visitors every year from tens of sports in Cyprus.
But it would be
Because of our country, which actually, Gosta, is a country that allows for people to visit during the off season. And sports tourism is actually incredible to assist countries in the off-season periods. Because, you know, we want to promote ourselves as a year-long destination, which sports could do that.
Well, that's what I was actually going to say. Like, I mean, like the government is trying to diversify its tourism product, like to bring people in winter, to get people off the beaches and into the mountains and into the cultural sites and whatnot. But there's also medical tourism, there's health tourism, and like you said, there's sports tourism, which is a growing industry. And as things develop, especially Cyprus being a member of the European Union, it's a warm climate country in winter. The weather in winter in Cyprus is the weather in summer in Scandinavia, for example, you know, give or take.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like if you're in minus 50 Stockholm, then you might as well come to Cyprus, which is plus 15, 20, and you can practice. I mean, of course, you're competing with other countries in the region, which is all very healthy.
And that's our main issue, though, because actually, you know, probably better than most about the tourism and competing with countries around us. Turkey is much cheaper than us, so a lot of sports tourism diverts to Turkey.
Okay.
But we do have other aspects that can attract people. We are a European Union country, like you mentioned.
English speaking,
of course, safer country than some other countries in our region. So all these come into factor. Sports tourism is a big industry and just a small part of sports in general, which was the question that started this whole discussion we had.
So tell me, just before we move on, I do want to say we have the next Olympic Games, the Summer Olympic Games are in Los Angeles in 2028.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
And then it's in Brisbane in 2032.
Back at your homeland.
Yes. Now, I was in Brisbane a year and a half ago, and they are very excitedly preparing. I mean, the whole city seems to be under construction. Now, we saw it in Athens in
2004.
And we saw it in Athens that the whole of Athens was revamped and changed overnight and became this modern city because of the Olympics. Comes at a cost.
Yeah.
Now, Brisbane ran basically unopposed.
That's correct.
And it's going to do a great job because Australia does sports well and does logistics well. Because, I mean, the Olympics is a logistical nightmare. We were talking earlier. Remind me how many. It's 2 weeks of hundreds of high-level world championship-level games,
so,
right?
So just to put things in perspective, you opened the unopposed. We want to discuss that. The benefits for Brisbane, which I would like to tell you, because I know that you have Australian people listening and people of that. And actually, I'm very pro Olympic Games and hosting games. If you do that correctly, it will boost your city for decades.
It created Barcelona. Barcelona was unknown to the world, and now it's number one tourism.
Yeah, the Olympic Games are a great case study for Barcelona. Athens, you mentioned Athens, which the rumors that the Olympic Games somehow bankrupt Greece is wrong. That's
correct,
wrong. Greece was going to be going bankrupt anyway because of other much serious reasons. The Olympic Games for Greece cost about 8 billion euros, and the whole debt of the country was in the triple digit billions. So it's not the same thing. But the Olympic Games generated a new airport for Athens, a new highway, the Northern Beltway. It generated the metro system in Athens.
Correct.
You see that Athens was benefited from this, and of course, hotels and the infrastructure.
Which the cost benefit of that $8 billion cost would have brought back much more income.
And I think the biggest case study now is Paris 2024. The Games created a great sense of national pride for France.
Yes.
It beautified the city even more than Paris.
I was going to say beautiful. It was already a beautiful city, but I was there just weeks before the Olympics, and Paris had another glitter to it.
That's what the Olympic Games do. They're the biggest sporting event. They're the biggest cultural and political and social event in the world.
It's bigger than Eurovision.
I'm a big Eurovision fan, but yeah, it is bigger than Eurovision.
Listeners either cringed or laughed.
Well, we're speaking to the sports fans and the Eurovision fans, so I think we pretty much cover the entire spectrum of people listening to us.
Now, in Cyprus, what title do you hold at the moment? You're the president of?
I'm the president of the Cyprus Sports Writers Association, which are the Association of Sports Journalists. We're not a union. We're a professional body, which represents the well-being of our members. We have about 300 members, which 300. is a pretty big number for a small country like ours.
I was going to say, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's
we have
two airplanes worth of Cypriots.
That's a very good. That's an American way to measure.
Yes, exactly. I did that on purpose. I just said that was like my little love.
An asteroid is three toasters in diameter. That's an American.
But look,
way
I mean, you're part American. I mean, so it was worth it.
I like the way you measured my association numbers.
Look, in Australia, I mean, Melbourne is the sporting capital of Australia, and everything is measured by how many people fit into the MCG, the Melbourne Cricket Ground, which
it's
is
100,000. How much is that?
I think it's like 120 at
could
capacity.
It's a huge stadium. I know that one.
No, actually, speaking
host of the 1956 Olympic
correct,
Games,
the first colorized and televised Olympics.
Although the equestrian events, you know what equestrian is?
Quiz.
Horses.
Equestrian.
The events of the 1956 Olympics took place in Stockholm. Because Australia did not allow horses to be
because of
our
very strict quarantine rules, which have existed forever. So don't take apples with you into the airport.
So Olympic history, and we actually met before the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games.
So the Commonwealth Games were in 2018. We met in 2017,
which were an incredible. We met in 2017 when I think you were working back then in the High Commission in Australia, and you brought me into contact with the incredible Cypriot diaspora in Brisbane, which they came to support us a year later during the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast. Well, such incredible experience.
It all began, first of all, with bringing over Indigenous Australians to do a smoking ceremony here at the Olympic House. And then we had the Queen's Banner Relay cover the whole island. Mm-hmm. Obviously the Commonwealth Games were in Brisbane. The Melbourne Commonwealth Games, though, you may be aware, were
2006. Yeah, I'm aware. I wasn't there. I was younger then. I was born in 1986, so that I was 20 back then. I was there. You were there at the games.
I was there at the games. I was helping the Cypriot and Malaysian teams. So I used to work at the municipality then.
That's incredible. I didn't know that.
Yeah, welcomed the Cypriot Commonwealth Games team. I got to know them, become very good friends with a few of them. The two Yannos of high jump and all the others. Mirto and Eleni. I mean, they came to Melbourne and they embraced Melbourne. The community of Melbourne embraced them. I mean, it was amazing.
I've actually spoken to athletes when we went to Gold Coast in 2018 for the Commonwealth Games, and they were still remembering, because we had athletes in 2018 that competed in 2006, and they were still remembering the incredible support by the Cypriot diaspora in Melbourne.
Yep. I think it was the year that Marcos Baghdadis did super well and got to the finals of the Australian Open.
Yes, so that's correct.
Yeah. That was a huge year for Cypriots, and especially the Cypriots of Melbourne.
But just a small point on Australia, because I don't know if you want to move on, but the 2018 Commonwealth Games were I've been fortunate to be to Olympic Games and many other sporting events. Those were the best games I've ever been to. The Australians were amazing hosts.
Yep.
The organization was exceptional. It was laid back Australian style, but everything was well organized. It was an incredible experience.
Australia is a relaxed country, but professional and gets stuff done.
Yeah, so that's what I realized. Yeah.
They balance the West and the East well, if it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does, actually. Yeah,
It does. And look, that's what Australia is. Tell me, you're also a member, I believe you are the treasurer of the International Association for Sports Press, correct?
Yeah, it's called AIPS Europe. Mm-hmm. I was elected in 2022
as the treasurer,
of the executive committee. Mm-hmm. That's another big thing that we've been running. That covers the association that I mentioned. Cyprus is one of 50 of the member associations of the European Sports Journalists Association.
So if there's 50 members in Europe, is that one member per country? Is each country
member? Yeah, that's how it goes. Just like the European Union.
So it's kind of, basically it must cover the Council of Europe countries, right? I mean, if it's 50
pretty
countries.
Pretty much.
Okay. Now, big news, you're going to, maybe some people are going to be hearing it first now, but the 11th of April, which for the Cypriots is Easter Saturday, for the rest of the world, it's a more important day. What's happening on the 11th of April?
Well, I think it's more important for being Easter or just a regular Saturday. But on that day, Saturday, the 11th of April, we have our elections in AIPS Europe, which I'm running for president.
You're running for president of the AIPS Europe. That's impressive. Right, yeah. And how many of you are competing for this position?
There's two of us. There's two guys, myself and a French colleague. Mm-hmm. We're running for the position of president, which... I mean, a Cypriot running for that position is something that's never been done before, which gives me incredible, pride and sense of responsibility. It's going to be a close election, in my view. We have about 50 countries members. I think about 40 of them will be present in Lausanne. We're going to Switzerland, the Olympic capital, actually. Yep. Lausanne is the Olympic capital. We're going to be there for our World Congress and European Congress, and hopefully I will be able to persuade 50% plus one of the countries to vote for me and not my opponent. I've actually sent my plan to the European colleagues. I've spoken to almost every single country of the presidents and the delegates who will be there. And I'm very confident that we could persuade, the majority to support us.
Well, I know you, and I'm confident, and I've seen how you work. I've seen your work, not just in Cyprus, but across Europe and internationally, right up to the Olympic level. So, I mean, I think that, I cannot see why somebody would disagree with us supporting Herodotos Miltiados for this position. I mean, as a Cypriot, you're basically bridging the two realms. So, East and West, North and South.
Yeah.
So that's on the political level. But you as a person are very capable. You know your stuff. You know sports. You know logistics. You're good at economy. I mean, you're the treasurer at the moment. You've got this backing of history and success behind you. And you're passionate. You're genuine. I mean, I know that here in Cyprus, for example, you've worked with both Cypriot communities. You understand the sports, the need for the economy to be in positive, in plus, the peace-building nature of the industry. What do you think would be the challenges as president going forward?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for what you just said. I mean, that, you know, it makes me feel something. I blush when people say things like that. So thank you for that. Well, being president of the Cyprus Association is a challenge by itself. Mm-hmm. We are trying to support our profession, mm-hmm. 300 members, trying to give them opportunities to get better, learn, do the job the best possible way. Mm-hmm. We also organize the National Sports Awards every year at the January with the presence always of the President of the Republic and the leadership of the country. Being a president at the European level is a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. We're talking about transnational organization, just like the European Olympic Committees is, or UEFA in football, or FIBA Europe in basketball, or even the European Union or all its bodies. So what we're going to try to do is bridge the countries, share expertise and knowledge between the countries, mm-hmm. Try to expand our profession in the European level to protect the journalists and the problems we have, like AI, artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. is a serious issue. We have to also be able to help journalists to have access to sporting events and have access to the information, because we're working in a profession with journalism, you know, has its own challenges in many aspects. So there's so many things we're trying to tackle in the European level. Mm-hmm. We've already started tackling it in the previous four-year term when I was treasurer of the EC. Hopefully, if I'm elected president, I could continue to try to implement my agenda with the colleagues that support me around Europe. Yep. And we could hopefully try to make our profession even better, because what we like saying, we as sports journalists, is that we do the most beautiful profession in the world.
Okay.
Because we get paid pretty much to go watch sports and cover sports. So that's beautiful by itself. Yeah. But in the same time, sports is such a huge industry with a lot of problems, but also nice things going around it. So it's important, you know, try to help our profession, try to make us better. And that's what we're trying to do to, you know, try to assist the profession in Europe.
I can definitely speak on behalf of Cypriots that you would be supported by the community. You'd be supported by Cyprus, because being the small country that we are, we stand out internally. So when Herodotos is going for this position, and Medokalo, as we say in Greek, you know, when you get elected, you would have the Republic of Cyprus and the people of Cyprus and the sports people of Cyprus and your colleagues supporting you and pushing you forward and offering assistance. You know, coming from bigger countries or whatever, it's easy to kind of vanish in the system and all that. So I have confidence that you'll be lifted up and supported.
It's interesting that you say, by the way, there's one country that will not vote for me. I know for that fact. They actually said that we should vote for the other guy because he comes from a bigger country, which is the most undemocratic thing I've ever heard. You vote for the guy that you believe will do the job.
Correct. You vote for the person that will do. Look, without knowing the other guy, of course, but you vote for the guy that you know is capable, able to do it. And
coming
from a bigger country actually comes with its negatives as well. I mean, you have maybe a bit too much weight and too much missed management.
Voting for the guy who comes from a bigger country is the wrong way to approach any election.
Correct.
But regardless, coming from a small country like Cyprus and trying to ask your colleagues in the entire continent to lead them for the next 4 years is a big ask by itself. But you see that the president of the European Parliament is from Malta.
Correct.
You see that the
Estonian... You just stole the words from my mouth. I was going to use it as an example.
The foreign affairs minister, the commission of the European Union is Estonian. You have smaller, let's say, countries which are leaders in many aspects. So that's the size
United
of the country.
The United Nations Security General is from
Portugal. Of course. So it does not matter where you're from, but what you are able to do. And I'm very confident that myself and my team, which I actually am very fortunate to have a great team next to me, we'll be able to...
Shout out to them.
We're going to do our best to try to convince everybody in Lausanne to support us. But coming from a small country, it does have its benefits, actually, because, yes, I do have the support of stakeholders in my country. Mm-hmm. The government has always been supportive, but always in a transparent and open way, because we're journalists. We must not forget that. Mm-hmm. And we come... Myself, specifically from a democratic Western country, as Cyprus is, a European Union country. Mm-hmm. So there's always the need to have good relations with your political leaders, but also make sure that you keep them in arm's length when it's needed.
Yeah.
And we're fortunate as Cypriots to be in that position.
This is the beauty of Cyprus, actually, where we can, the most common person has access to the top echelons of government, but at the same time, you can keep an arm's length away if needed or as directed.
It's the benefits of a small country, but at the same time, it's has its own challenges. You being from a small country, it's always you always know each other. You always have to be more diplomatic in ways. But you know, these are things that you could implement also when you're dealing with larger bodies.
And if we're going to be talking about comparing you to larger countries, I mean, we have to remember that the Cypriot diaspora across Europe, in the UK, and then across the world, all the way to Australia, Canada, America, you name it. I mean, as Cypriots, we're spread everywhere. We're one of the leading diaspora communities in the world. I mean, the big five are basically Indians, Jewish, Greek, Cypriot, and Filipino. These are the big five per capita diaspora communities
per capita
in the world.
Okay.
And I say per capita very consciously because obviously Cyprus being so small.
Yeah.
But there's not a rock that you don't lift anywhere in
That's
the world
true.
And not find a Cypriot
and
underneath.
And being someone from sports, which I've been privileged to travel around the world for sporting events, everywhere I go, there's always Cypriots there. It's incredible.
Well, I was going to say to you, I mean, maybe you're already aware of this, but I think there's one or two Cypriots in the Australian Socceroos team. I think his name is Aziz. I can't remember. He's a Turkish Cypriot.
Okay.
And he plays for a team in Australia. I'm embarrassed. I can't remember what team this is now. But I know that he plays with the Socceroos, which is like the national team of Australia. And a few years ago when the Matildas passed through Cyprus, which is the female team, there was a Turkish Cypriot I'm not sure the right word for this, coach, sub-coach, assistant coach. And I just thought, wow, like look at these Cypriots all around the world involved at the highest levels of sport, you know.
The most successful Australian weightlifter, 1968 or 72, I think 72 in Munich. His name was, his Australian name was George Vasil.
All right.
But he was born as Yorgos Vasiliadis.
Get
he's from
out.
Cyprus.
I had no idea. That's something
Yorgos Vasiliadis. He was sixth, I think, if I recall, in the Olympic Games in 1972 in Munich.
Hey, is there a statue of him?
There is. Yeah. You knew that? In the Olympic House.
I met his grandson.
Nicosia. Yep.
Oh,
that's him.
I cannot believe I totally forgot about it.
I just opened the memory for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Because outside the Olympic House in Nicosia, there is a statue of a weightlifter. George Vasil that you mentioned, Australian weightlifter. His grandson is an archer. Does archery.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And he was in Cyprus visiting some years ago.
George came to Cyprus recently as well. Yeah.
He keeps
relations with. He's from a village up in the mountains, Drodos, but I don't remember which village it is. I'm blanking out.
We're going to have to pull there because I know that maybe it was his son, but I'm pretty sure it was his grandson, was training in Europe and popped into Cyprus. And
probably,
We crossed paths and I was just blown away.
There's so many athletes of Cypriot heritage who are competing for other countries. We even have an Australian basketball player who competes for a Cypriot basketball team now, Anaik in Larnaca. I'm blanking his name right now. Askim Notic is his name.
Okay.
His grandmother's from Limassol, and he came to Cyprus for 3 years ago to play for Apoel and then to AEK Larnaca. And he's an Australian.
I know that there's been Australians in other teams as well. There was one or two that had played with Apoel, a football team, and there was one that played for, what's the team in Larnaca that's green? Excuse my ignorance. Maybe we're talking about the same person.
Yeah.
I always find that quite fascinating from the big country of Australia coming to Cyprus. I mean, this is such a great asset for Cyprus. But can I just, as we're closing up, I do want to give you an anecdote about this experience I had in Las Vegas about 4 years ago. I was in a sports shop. And I was buying some shoes, and like I wear size 46, which is like US 14, I think.
Yeah.
Huge shoe.
Same size for me as well.
46. All right.
Okay. Yeah, we're brothers.
We must check our DNA, sister, because we're limited in Cyprus. But so I was in what I call the nosebleeds of the shoe size section. Okay.
Yeah.
And there was this fellow there, I think African American background, super tall, and he was even bigger than mine. And I made the joke to him. I see that you have also been banished to the back corners of the sports store. And we had a chuckle and he said, where are you from? And I said, Cyprus. And he goes, oh, I love Cyprus. And I'm like, sure you do. You're thinking of Cyprus Gardens or Cyprus Hill. You know, and I've gone, yeah, okay. He goes, yeah, no, Limassol's my favorite city. And I went, what? Like I was blown away. And I've gone, okay, how do you know Limassol? He goes, 1 second. He pulls out his phone, goes into his Instagram and shows me a picture of himself wearing a team AL, I think, in Limassol.
Okay.
I play basketball for this team and we won the championships in such and such a year. And I was like, I was looking and I'm thinking, what's going on here? I'm in Las Vegas and I bumped into
such
this guy.
Such a small world. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. And then O'Bailey, his surname was O'Bailey.
Okay.
And he's got he runs this course for kids of learning how to play sports in Las Vegas. I was just so blown away by these links to Cyprus. Mm-hmm. I won't say the deepest corners of the world because Las Vegas is in a corner, but you know, like we're everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's incredible. And stories like that I've also encountered so many times. And, you know, it's always nice to also see people that speak best about your country when you're abroad, or even the diaspora. Going back to the games in 2018, you know, meeting all those Cypriots in Brisbane. We went to Brisbane then. It was an amazing and a humbling experience because you get to see that how important this island is for people that either lived here for a short period, worked like the American guy you met, or even the Cypriots that are living abroad and feel connected to our country.
Look, I'm hoping that the next time we chat, I'm going to be able to say proudly that we have a Cypriot at the head of the helm of the AIPS Europe. I wish you the best of luck. I know that you're an open book. I know that anyone who has any questions can reach out to you, not just for the candidacy, but sports in general. I want to thank you and show you some appreciation for the amazing work you do in the industry. You bring sports to a sports idiot like me to an understandable language, and I appreciate that. You've opened doors for me over the years. I wish you the very best, and I really do look forward to hearing good news in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And is there any last comments you want to make in support of your candidacy and for Cyprus sports in general?
So, first of all, thank you so much for your time, Costa. It was incredible. It's always a joy to speak with you. I think that you're also doing an incredible job and everything at the political level. I wish you all the best at the elections coming up with Volt and everything, your action in Cyprus and supporting all the communities in Cyprus. And I know that you're very active. So I'm also proud of you. I feel that the last 10 years we're friends, and I've also been following your day-to-day things that you do, and I'm hope that you keep it up as well. And of course, I would love to be here again and help you and discuss in more depth of any other topic you want, because sports is such a beautiful thing, and sports is an amazingly nice thing to follow. As a fan, as an amateur athlete, just to go out and do some sports. And we as sports journalists, we want to bring sports into every house. And that's our role. That's our job.
Well, let me just tell you, we have sports in this house. My daughter is doing archery.
All right.
And is damn
sport.
Good at it.
Lovely sport.
She gets bullseyes every time. It blows my mind. And her coach sees a promising future.
Okay.
And I know that Cypriots in general, we're very good at target sports.
Yes.
Like skeet shooting and archery. So I'm hoping she's got the gene.
Well, we've had Olympic athletes in archery. I think the last one was in Beijing, 2008. A Cypriot athlete competed. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, I don't know, why not? Maybe the
and
next couple of games.
And it's certainly cheaper than sailing, where we do well as well.
We do well in sailing. We do well at the target shooting and the gymnastics. We have a great athletes.
Yeah.
Again, we could talk about the biology of the Cypriots and why we're good at specific sports, which is an actual thing.
Oh.
But yeah, archery is one of those sports that we actually could be good at. So no, hopefully,
I know we said we're coming to an end, but no, you need to explain this. Why? What's the physical thing that about Cypriots?
Think about it. You have the Scandinavians who are good at which sports that require height. You know.
Okay.
You have people athletes from Africa which are good at longer distance sports because they require bigger lung capacity. It depends on what region you are, because people, although we are all the same, we are all human, but coming from different regions of the world, people have different physical attributes, either height or speed or stamina. And we as Cypriots, we're on the shorter side.
Yeah,
I think you know, as
except
Cypriots.
Me, you,
okay, I mean, I'm 180, so I'm considered taller in Cyprus. But when I go abroad with my European colleagues, I'm one of the shorter ones there.
Sure.
We as Cypriots, we're a little bit shorter. We're a little bit in the smaller bodies, which is I mean, we're gorgeous. It's explained biologically why. Yeah. And this allows us to be good at sports like shooting, like gymnastics, mm-hmm. Some sports like individual sports which don't require contact.
Okay.
So we're better at that. That's why we have good athletes at shooting and gymnastics and what else? And sailing, of course, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. That's why we don't have good team sports, because we're like our basketball team is doing its best.
Yeah.
But we lack of players of higher, like 2'5", 2'6". We don't have high tall players. Okay. So that doesn't allow us to be competitive in team sports like basketball or volleyball. But in football, we could have a better team. Because football is a sport where athletes are not as taller as other sports. Yep. I could speak for hours about this. I know people make it bored easily, but it's actually very interesting to see why some countries are good in specific sports and why some countries are good in all sports.
Yeah.
And why there's huge countries like India, mm-hmm. which are good at almost no sports. It's a huge discussion, and it has to do with also funding and national programs and infrastructure mm-hmm, mm-hmm. plays a lot of role. Yep. But also, if you go back in time during the Soviet times, sports doping. Yes. The Soviet Union and the Eastern European countries, they used to use sports as a means to promote their country. So they used to spend money on illegal ways to dope their athletes, which also Russia has been doing recently as well with the national doping scheme, which banned them from the Olympics before the Russian invasion in Ukraine. So there's a lot of things we could discuss about sports and politics.
No, it sounds like I need to have you back as the president of the AIPS Europe.
More than happy to be here again.
Inshallah. Thank you so much, Rodo Domu.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And all the best. Looking forward to chatting again soon.
All the best, Mr. Thank you.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.